Michael Card has written 48,000 English words to explain a single Hebrew word. Oh, what a word. Let's talk about it on Steve Brown at 7.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown at 7.
And I am the aforementioned old white guy. My name is Steve. Eric Guzman is with us. Last week, Eric was a little under the weather, but now he's back to being over everything. And our producer, Jinx, is working hard in the little glass booth, helping us reach our goal of being not half bad.
Takes a lot of production.
The president of Key Life, Dr. George Bingham, is here. By the way, you can always give to Key Life right now at keylife.org.
And we'll repeat that again multiple times.
He asked me to remind you.
It's after then, we do Eric's book plug again.
What else can you get at keylife.org?
You wrote a book?
What? You heard about that?
And my pastor's here, so I'm going to be a little bit sedate. I'm going to watch the language and the jokes. He's joined us today, Kevin Labby. Of course, a pastor's life is full of frustration and heartbreak, but God prepared Kevin for that calling. He made him a Buffalo Bills fan. And Kathy is the soft feminine side of the program. Quick baking tip from Kathy. The best way to keep a cake from drying out, just go ahead and eat the whole thing.
Quickly.
Or share it with all your friends, as you do.
You know, your writer is absent today, so he got a little careless today with some of his intro material.
Our guest is Michael Card. And if you don't know who he is, there's something wrong with you. You're living on another planet. He's an award-winning musician, a performing artist. He's earned a master's degree in biblical studies from Western Kentucky University, and he's authored nearly 30 books. And his commentary on the gospel, there are four of them, are absolutely wonderful and sit on the credenza in my study, and I use them a lot. At any rate, we're going to talk today about his new book, Inexpressible, Hesed and the Mystery of God's Loving Kindness. Michael, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Steve. It's just good to hear your voice again. You know, I've been listening to you since I was in college. That was back in the cuneiform days. I remember looking at some scrolls and hearing your voice.
Listen,
I'm being silly, but it really is good to hear your voice, brother. I'm sorry for being silly, but you guys started it.
So. Yeah, we don't tolerate a lot of silliness around here.
I mean, we don't even think you're saved. I can't believe that you would do that sort of thing.
Get in line.
I've been reading this book. This is really a cool book.
Good.
I mean, I've never read a book like this before, ever. And you got to know, I'm old as dirt. I've been doing this for before you were born, Michael. And
since God was a boy.
And I thought, you know, they send me piles and piles of Christian books, and you know,
I bet.
But it's very rare to find something that's really different, and I hold your different book in my nicotine-stained fingers. What were you, just bored or something, and you decided, I'm going to pick a word out of the Bible, and I'm going to spend my life committed to this?
Yeah. I mean, I've actually got it tattooed on my arm, the word hesed, so that's how crazy I am about this word. I don't know. I don't know what possessed me. It broke my brain writing it. I haven't been able to speak in complete sentences since I've
well,
finished.
You did.
And I'm not kidding.
Well, you seriously, in the book, you talk about how this has haunted you, and you can't remember all of the details.
Yep.
But talk about that.
Well, I got on onto this, the idea of Hesed when I was working on the laments of the Old Testament, which is, you know, that's a vast, that's not one word. That's like lots of words. So, this word kept coming up in really amazing situations. Basically, when a lament would change from lamenting to worship, frequently this word Hesed is there. And so, I had a discussion with, you know, he says he never said this, but I was talking to Bruce Waltke, who is the Old Testament, probably the greatest Old Testament scholar in the world. And I clearly remember him saying, that's the defining characteristic of God, to which I said, what? And now I asked him later about that, and he said, I never said that. But he did say that.
Did he agree that if he had said it, he would agree with the statement? Or did he say, that's nonsense, or what?
In his, he's the editor of the I think they call it the theological word book of the Bible. It's, 200 volumes or something.
Oh, he's something
and,
else.
And he did say it's the most sacramental word. He did say that. I have that in writing.
Yes.
I'm from Tennessee. Why let the truth get in the way of good story? I still believe he said it, but I'm the one with the broke brain. It's this amazing word. It occurs about 250 times in the Hebrew Bible. And I surveyed 6 different English translations. I looked this word up 250 times in 6 different English translations. You're welcome. And it's translated 169 different ways.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, our good friend Eugene Peterson, he translated it 57 different ways. So he knocked the number way up. But King James, I think, translates it 14 different ways. And I started seeing those numbers and reading all the ways the translators struggled to find words. The word loving kindness was a word that was made up in 1535 by Miles Coverdale to translate this word Hesed. He made up the word, and people make up all kinds of words or combine all kinds of words to try to translate it because it's untranslatable. And I just became obsessed with it. I'm still obsessed with it.
You know, one of the. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I want to develop what I call an instinct for doing Hesed, and I'm doing all kinds of weird things now. One of my experiments is when I go to the grocery store, I look for people to take their empty carts back, into the grocery store, just as a simple act of Hesed, because one of the meanings of Hesed is kindness. Can be a very small act of kindness. And I look for people to do that for. And to date, 2 little old ladies, because I usually offer, little old ladies, I'm very careful. I don't get too close. I mean, I stand several yards away and shout, can I help you with your cart? I'm not stupid. But to date, 2 little old ladies have burst into tears. Just because I offered to do something kind. And so it's a very powerful thing. It's a very powerful thing, but it's connected to the image of God, which is where I think the power comes from. It's not just being nice.
Now you're thinking.
All nice down here.
You people who are listening right now are saying, "I'm not getting that book, man. You're going to do a word and give me definitions? I'll get a dictionary. It'll be cheaper."
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. The first thing you do when you open the first page of the book is that you get the word and then a full page of different meanings of that word. And then through the word, that word, you're able to see something about God that is so incredible and mind-blowing that it'll blow you away. How do you feel about this book now that it's out? This is different than what you've done.
No, I, you know, like I said, it was life changing writing it, and I'm still, I think about it all the time. It's something that preoccupies me. I think Jesus incarnated it. I think the word that became flesh wasn't Logos. I think it was Hesed, because John doesn't think in Greek. John thinks in Hebrew. And when he says Jesus is full of grace and truth, that word for grace in the Old Testament is the word Hesed. I think it's the big surprise of the Hebrew Bible. I think the surprise of the New Testament is that when Jesus comes, when the Messiah comes, he's a slave. Nobody saw that coming. You know, Peter says, you know, you ought not to be washing my feet. I think the big surprise of the Hebrew Bible is that God is kind. I don't think anybody saw that coming.
Listen, very quickly, just give us your definition. And then when we get on the other side of the break, we'll unpack that. That definition blows me away. Give it to us.
Okay, my definition is when the person from whom I have a right to expect nothing gives me everything.
Oh, that'll work. Yeah. And we're going to talk about it. Listen, you've got to get this book. This really is a kind of life-changing book. You think if I'm in a flood, I'll stand on it because I'll stay dry? Don't believe it, man. This is a book you'll think about the rest of your life. But for now, this is hard work. And we're going to rest up. Get some milk and cookies. But we're coming back.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know, a gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
Card is our guest, and his book is Inexpressible, Hesed and the Mystery of God's Loving Kindness. Michael, one more time, give us your definition, and then we'll get into it.
Okay, Steve. My definition's incomplete, because there's no complete one, but my shot at it is when the person from whom I have a right to expect nothing gives me everything.
And you apply that to God, and Jesus is the manifestation of it.
Yeah, Jesus incarnates it, he lives it out, he teaches it, but he also demands it from us. We should forgive as we have been forgiven. So I have no right to expect people who have no right to expect anything from me. My enemies, most especially, they should receive everything from me. Why? Because I was God's enemy, and he gave everything to me. So Jesus defines Hesed in Luke 6. He says that God is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. That's Jesus' definition of it.
If I remember from seminary correctly, this word Hesed can be translated as God's covenant love. Is that correct? And so can you talk about how this word ties into covenant theology?
Yeah. Well, that was something that was made much of until around 1969. A scholar, Catherine Frankenfeld, wrote a book. Prior to that, it was always covenant. Hesed was this, God sort of owed us Hesed because he made this covenant with us. And Sankenfeld said, no, it's really the other way around. Because God is a God of Hesed, he makes covenants with us. We keep breaking them, and he keeps keeping them. And ultimately, in the new covenant, he through the death of his son, the sacrifice he makes of his own son, he keeps this covenant that we can't keep. So I say, yeah, Hesed is a covenant idea, but Hesed comes first. The revealed nature of God to people like Moses on the mountain, I'm full of Hesed and truth, God says. And then that God makes covenants with us. That makes sense?
Yeah,
it does. He makes
covenants and then does both parts of the deal.
Right. What? Right. Why? Why? Because I have no right to expect anything from him because I broke the covenant. In fact, that's all I do. That's all I do is break the covenant. And what happens? He makes the sacrifice for me. He writes the law in my heart. He does that. Why? Because he's a God of loving kindness.
And then flows through with that same Hesed, like you were saying.
Yeah.
We duplicate it.
And I think you see that. I mean, unfortunately, the only word I could find was reciprocity, which kind of stinks as a word, but
it really does.
I know. Trust me, that word. There's no other word. When the word has to come up in the historical books, usually in regards to David, but sometimes in regards to Israel, like David and Jonathan. Jonathan shows David Hesed, and David reciprocates. And if you don't reciprocate, you haven't broken a covenant. You have violated something much deeper. And I think that's what happens in our relationship with God. God establishes, through the mercy and grace, he establishes a relationship with us. And then there is this expectation that we will reciprocate and forgive our enemies and love people. And if we don't, there is this deep disappointment that's I think, way worse than breaking a covenant. I'm disappointed a person whose lordship is absolute over me.
Michael, and you're kind of getting to the question that came to mind for me. I mean, most of this seems like it's, God's action or applying to God. And, of course, you gave an example of yourself doing acts of kindness a little tip for the listeners, make sure the little old ladies have taken the groceries out of their cart before you take
and
their cart back.
Yeah.
But
sounds like the voice of experience right
now. Well, yeah. Sometimes trying to do kind things doesn't work out so well. But
not at our grocery store.
You carry guns at that one.
They want quarters.
Yeah, but what are some of the other situations where Hesed applies to the actions of, believers or people?
Well, in the first place, you make a really good point there that we shouldn't have this expectation. Well, if I do Hesed, then people are going to get it and show Hesed back to me. Another small example, I'm on an airplane and this lady's getting her bag out of the overhead and I help her. And she got mad at me.
She had her dog in there.
Huh?
She probably had her dog in there.
She looked at me. She said, "Did you do that because I'm a woman?"
Oh,
I said, "No, I did." I said, "I did that because I'm Eileen Card's boy." That's the only kind of smart aleck thing I could think of. So certainly Jesus doing Hesed, didn't turn out so well. From one point of view.
No, so I would have done the same thing for a weak looking man.
An ugly man.
I think Hesed can be small. I think Jesus, when he talks about a cup of cold water, I think that can be Hesed. But I think they can be huge. And I give some examples in the book of, and I think it was 1989, Keisha Thomas in Holland, Michigan. She was there protesting a white supremacy rally. She's an African American. And one of the KKK guys got in the middle of the black protesters. Of course, they're kicking him and they're beating him. And she throws herself on top of him and saves his life. It was the Time Life Picture of the Year. Now, that's when the person that man had no right to expect anything from Keisha. What did he get? He got everything.
Oh, man.
Life, that sort of thing.
Well, I expect.
I go to a Bible study here in Franklin, and there's a man there whose 14-year-old son was shot and killed by another 14-year-old in a drug deal that went bad. because he was a minor, he had mandatory, and it was a gun was involved, there was a mandatory time in jail. But after he got out, the man of whose son had been killed adopted the boy who killed his son and is now raising him as his son.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And that's tested. Something like that happens, you go, we have no word for that.
Right? We really don't.
No, we don't.
Yeah, I mean, that's supernatural. There's no other explanation.
Yeah, it is. Exactly.
Well, I practice Hesed a lot. I've let people in traffic. and if they don't thank me, I make an obscene gesture.
right.
Looking for the reciprocal.
You just unheseded yourself.
That's not exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, but you do have a chapter, which is the 109th Psalm. That's not one I read at night before I go to sleep because it keeps me awake. The guy who wrote the psalm is really ticked.
Yeah,
and then I think you had to force Hesed into that psalm, but we'll see on the other side of the break. Guys, you're listening to Steve Brown, etc., and Michael Card is our guest, one of our favorite people. Profound, insightful book. It's called Inexpressible, Hesed and the Mystery of God's Loving Kindness. A lot more to go yet. Don't you dare go away. The great blues guitarist B.B. King once said, "Nobody loves me except my mom, and she might be jiving me too." You would have loved my mom. She's in heaven now, straightening out God. She was strong, earthy, and she loved me with all her heart. I've often said that if I became a serial killer, she'd be angry, but she'd tell her friends that they needed killing. A mother's love can excuse a multitude of sin. You know how God loves? There's never, ever blindness in His love. He knows the truth about what we've done, and He loves us anyway. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Hey, share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. Thanks for joining us. I'm Steve Brown, etc. We've been talking to Michael Card. You can read more for him and follow him on Twitter. That's Michael_Card, at Michael_Card. Michael, we were on the other side of the break. We were talking about Psalm 109, and you have a chapter in your book called A Prayer of Honest Rage.
Yes.
I love that chapter. Talk to us about it.
Sounds good to me, too.
Yeah, man. I mean, it kind of fit the obscene gesture to the person who didn't thank me, and I felt better about it. I read that psalm every time I do that.
Yeah. Well, the person that I'm relying on to help me with that is a person I have a huge respect for, and that's Walter Brueggemann. And he's the only person that I ever that ever really engaged with it. Besides, you know, some people say, "Oh, that psalm is not for us anymore," and Brueggemann says, "No, this kind of anger belongs in our prayers." And yeah, Psalm 109, and it's not the only one. 83 is pretty dark too. And Psalm 109 is David, and 83 is Asaph. So, you know, we're spreading this around. This is an idea that's an accepted idea.
It's not one uptight guy.
Well, I think what it is, it's someone who is outraged. In 109, David is, we think he's talking about, or Brueggemann thinks he's talking about an official in his court. Bruce Waltke thinks he's talking about Saul. But whichever, there's this person who has hugely disappointed David because they've been given power to care for the poor, and they have taken from the poor insofar as they've actually killed people. And what happens is David is absolutely furious, as I think he should be. But the point of Psalm 109 is David is counting on the fact that God is even angrier than he is. And so he's basically handing this guy over, and he says some pretty, let his children be fatherless and tear his house down and all this kind of stuff. Let his wife be a widow. And in reality, what he's praying is that all the stuff that this guy did to the poor is going to happen to him, all because he did not show hesed. Hesed was shown to him, but he didn't show hesed in return. And I think what we have to learn is, God does get angry. He's not defined by his anger. But you can trust that if you have been hurt and abused in this sort of way, you can trust that God is just as angry and outraged by it as you are. Yeah. That's the point, I think, of Psalm 109.
Good stuff.
So with it being such a big deal that we need to image God, show this hesed, like we just heard in Psalm 109, and we heard about this guy in the last segment who adopted the 14-year-old killer of his 14-year-old son.
Yes.
That's amazing, an amazing display of hesed. How do you get to that point? That's epic. No. But how do you even approach to start doing this? It can't be you just try really hard to not hate those people.
No, forgive me for saying this, but that is a brilliant question. That is the question. How do you get there? I mean, the question is, how do I love my enemies? Right? And how do I love my enemies? Well, what I do is I read Psalm 109. I acknowledge to God that I have enemies, which a lot of Christians aren't willing to do because they think it makes them bad people. Yeah. I give my enemies over to God. I don't go and burn their house down, but I say, God, you get them. Mm-hmm. In your hesed, and that's what David prays in Psalm 109, in your hesed, let them have, you decide what needs to happen to them. And in the process of acknowledging I have enemies and then handing them over to God, then I think I can begin to let God give me the grace to love them. That's when we kick into in Luke 6 and Jesus' definition of hesed, that God is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Jesus says that after a long discourse on the fact that we have to love our enemies. Why do we love our enemies? Because God loves his enemies. God is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Who's that? That's us. That's me. And so we're back to reciprocity, because God has loved me kind and ungrateful and wicked as I am. Once I realize that this sort of exchange has happened, then I'm able to love my enemies. But I think, like you said, it's not just me trying real hard. I think it's me acknowledging my hatred. It's acknowledging, first of all, that I have enemies, and going through this, I hate to call it a process, but that's kind of what it is.
You talk about one of the aspects of God's loving kindness toward his children is allowing them to experience the consequences of their poor decisions and their sin and that sort of thing. Can you kind of flesh that out too?
Well, you can't.
Yeah.
Yes.
I can't.
If you can do flesh it out in 25 seconds. I mean, you can go on the next.
That's Exodus 34. When God reveals himself, he's full of hesed. He shows hesed to 1,000 generations. He's not easily angered, he says. That doesn't mean he didn't get angry. He's not easily angered. But then he says, I allow the consequences of the father's sin to be experienced by the children to the second and third generation. And that's about to happen in the wilderness. The Israelites, the second and third generations, are going to have to go into the wilderness and experience the consequences of their father's sin, because their fathers wouldn't enter the promised land. And then later on, that 40 years later, they are a different people when they enter the land.
Huh, that works. I gave you a little bit more than 25 seconds. But
well, thank you.
In your heart, you're a preacher, and you just can't help it. So, guys, we're going to back out for a little bit, but we've got a lot more. You know, this word kind of gets into your bones, and you start thinking about it, and you start living it and stuff.
Thank you.
Did you hear about the man and woman who were emailing each other complaining about their marriages? He wrote under the name of Prince of Joy, and she under the name of Sweetie. They decided to have a clandestine meeting. And you know what? They discovered that they were married to each other. They're suing each other for divorce on the grounds of unfaithfulness. Now, that's dumb. Probably the best communication they had had in their entire married life. Hey, take time to look at your place. It may be better than you think. After all, he gave it to you. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. You're listening to Steve Brown, etc. Our guest is the obnoxiously talented Michael. I told God this morning he ought to give one gift to each Christian, not multiple gifts. Michael also has a new album you should check out. It's called The Kindness of God. The book and the album are, you think, connected, Michael? Hey, listen, I said on the other side of the break that Hesed gets into your bones. The reason I hesitated is that I was going to use the biblical word bowels, but I decided it would be misunderstood.
I think it was.
You want to comment on that?
So, Steve, are you saying when you think about Hesed, you are moved in your bowels?
No. You know, Ed Leach one time said to me, Steve, you're good for my bowels. And I looked shocked. And he said, I mean that in the biblical sense.
You know, you said it takes so many words to define Hesed. Is one of those words like fiber?
All right. Does it get into your bones?
Well, you said that right before the break, and I almost exploded because that's a huge, huge idea. And the reason being this, I think we're all pointy-headed fundamentalists. We would all agree that we're made in the image of God. Okay, and we know from Exodus 34 and lots of other places that God defines himself. A big part of his image is that he's a God of loving kindness. He's a God of Hesed. Well, I think that what that means is that, you know, talk about it being in your bones. I think woven into our image bearing, or however you want to put it, of God, is the fact that we have this in us, which I think explains why when I see even the smallest act of Hesed, something in me resonates. When I read about or when I see my friend who adopted the kid who killed his kid, there's a tear in my eye when I think about it. When I see that Time Life picture of the year of Keisha Thomas saving the life of this white supremacist, there's just something in me that groans. I don't know if that's a word for it, but if you don't respond, there's something really wrong with you. I think you've shut something off.
Yeah.
Because I think we were created in God's image, and when someone is kind to me, get this. I'm in a hospital. My wife had her appendix out, and I'm getting some candy and some stuff, you know, for me to eat while she sits there and suffers, you know. Three musketeer bars, and, you know, maybe when you feel better, you can eat one of these kind of things. But anyway, there's this lady in front of me in line, and she goes, well, why don't you just go ahead of me? You know, and I'm Island Cards boy. I'm not going to let any lady go in front of me in line. That's just against the way I was raised. And I said, no, that's okay. You go ahead. She goes, no, really, I need to talk to the lady. I go, no, really, you know, I don't. And then she said, why won't you let me be kind to you? Mm. It was this huge moment, and I realized, I want to show Hesed to other people, but when someone tries to be kind to me, it's like my pride or my sinfulness or you name it keeps me from responding. But I think we were created to live in the context of this kind of kindness. And the first thing you experience when you're born is your mother's Hesed, I think.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Michael, I do have a question, but first I just have a comment that I want to make to tell you how much I truly appreciated your comments about the ladies in the grocery carts in the parking lot, because just the other day I got into my car after being there at the grocery store, and the lady who was next to me took her cart, and she literally pushed it right behind my car so that I couldn't back out. But I knew about this word because I had your book on my desk for a while. And so as I got out of the car to move her cart so that I could back out, I did say thank you to her with some very, very interesting gestures, not obscene of any kind, but some very interesting gestures to show her how thankful I was for her kindness. Yeah.
You
so
said,
anyway,
turn,
yeah.
You said, turn with me to Psalm 109.
Let's do a little study. I'm gonna give you up to the kindness of God.
Yeah, my thank you was on the heels of really, but anyway, seriously. In the book, you do talk about some very familiar characters in the Bible, like Moses and David and all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. names that we are for whom we are significantly familiar, obviously.
Sure.
But you do mention that there was a nameless person who really did amaze Jesus with his faith, and I wondered if you could just share a little bit about that.
Yeah, oh, I'm so glad you asked me about that. that's really kind of the final piece of the puzzle. In the book of Luke, in chapter 7, we have it's my favorite story in the New Testament. We have the centurion, who everyone knows the story. The Jewish elders come to him and they ask Jesus, heal his daughter. No, heal his slave. The slave is sick. Heal his slave because he deserves it. He loves our nation. He built our synagogue. So that's kind of Judaism in a nutshell, right? You know, he's done the right things. He's generous. He's donated, blah, blah, blah. And so he deserves it. And so Jesus is on his way to heal the slave. And the soldier sends his friend to Jesus and says, hey, don't bother, because I don't deserve it. I don't deserve to have you come to my house, but say the word, and you'll be healed. And what happens is Jesus is amazed by that. You read that passage and you go, well, what just happened? What amazed Jesus? And I think what amazed Jesus is that he was willing to ask for what he did not deserve. The person from whom I have a right to expect nothing gives me everything. This Gentile, God-fearer, seemed to understand that Jesus is a person, I can ask for things I don't deserve. And he's so gracious. He's so much a God of hesed, he'll do it. Same thing happened in Moses when in Exodus 34, when God reveals himself to Moses. The first thing Moses says is, please go with us into the land, because God had said he wasn't going to go. But now Moses knows he can ask for things he doesn't deserve, because God has just revealed himself as God of hesed. Thanks for asking that question.
Man, that, you know, as you know, this is a talk show and a ministry that's big on radical grace. And I want to thank you for spending time with us, because your book causes Grace to pick up her skirts and dance. It really does. I mean, I understood some things this morning reading your book that I hadn't gotten in my heart. So thanks for being with us, and thanks for writing this book, Michael.
Thanks for having me. You don't know how much I appreciate it. I don't get as many chances to talk about it as I wish I could, so thank you.
All right, Michael Gard, get this book. Make it a book for your small group study. It's called Inexpressible, Hesed, and the Mystery of God's Loving Kindness. Our guest has been Michael Gard. And we've got one more short segment coming up. I know some of you, and I know your names. You turn off the radio right now. Don't do it. Because that's the most sterling 3 minutes in all of Christian broadcasting. And you simply don't want to miss it.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Welcome back, Steve.
Listen.
Kathy left and you just went on vacation.
I just offended Michael Card. He'll never speak to me again. No, it was. We got to talking and I wasn't watching the fancy clock that we have in the studio.
Your producer works really hard on it.
And that the producer did the software. I mean, we're uptown around here. And generally at this point in the program, I ask Kathy who's going to be on next week. But, guys, the rapture has occurred, and she's no longer here.
Well, speaking of the rapture, I can tell you who the guest is and what we're talking about next week. Twisted Scripture, Untangling 45 Lies Christians Have Been Told. Okay, maybe the rapture is not one of them. Maybe it is. But Andrew Farley is going to talk about things like eternal security, church traditions, like, you know, do you have to be baptized in water to be saved? Like all these doctrines that various denominations have grabbed onto, like he goes
they're
at
not
them.
True.
He's going to tell us the truth.
Am I not eternally secure?
I don't know. You're going to have to wait till next week to find out.
Have you gone swimming?
Oh man, that's kind of scary.
What does it mean to be filled with the Holy Spirit? Is it hard to know God's will for your life? These questions and more will be answered on next week's Steve Brown, Etc.
I wonder if you'll address Hesed.
I don't know.
I think that's a myth. That wouldn't be in there.
You think the whole idea that Michael's been talking
about
is
it's very real, so it wouldn't be in the...
It wouldn't be one of the 45 lies that Christians have been
right.
told.
I bet Kevin knows a few lies.
By the way, going back...
You heard some good ones?
Going back...
He's being silent in this segment.
Going back to the interview with Michael, that really is a good book. And the idea of Hesed, I've never seen anybody take it and make it dance the way he did. You know, it takes God's love... His loving kindness, which is how it's translated a lot of times. And it really makes you see deeper in a more profound and a real way. We were talking about how I do not do that when I let somebody in and they don't thank me and I make an obscene gesture. God convicts me, but my wife is always sitting beside me and she slaps me because she thinks... the Holy Spirit. I tell her to leave me alone, man. Guys, we got to go. We're so glad you were with us during this hour. We'll be back same time, same place next week. And between now and then, don't do anything we wouldn't. And that gives you a wide, wide berth.